Hey there! Are you interested in getting access to the recordings of my monthly masterclass hangouts, where we do deep dives into different travel hacking programs? If so, please check out the Patreon at patreon.com/geobreezetravel. Patreon members will also get to vote on the charity of the month, because in case you didn't already know, all of the GeoBreeze travel income gets earmarked for donations to different nonprofits. That includes the income from the monthly hangouts, coaching services, and credit card affiliate signups. Links to all of those are available in the show notes. This week's Patreon shout out goes out to Victoria. Thank you so much for being a part of the GeoBreeze Travel Patreon community. Welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast, a show for anyone wanting to level up their travel hacking lifestyle. I'm your host, Julia Menez. I'm a travel hacker, coach, speaker, Filipina-American ENTJ who loves solid travel gear and using shortcuts on spreadsheets. On this show, I'm on a mission to bring you travel hackers from all walks of life to help you level up your travel hacking game. We dive into credit cards, miles, points, strategy, mindset, and the secrets behind how to travel the world for next to no cost. So let's get hacking.
It's kind of my way of sticking it to the man after years of the ways in which these banks boxed people out of having access to them. So to me, I'm like, scam scammers, yo. And again, I know that sounds terrible, but I'm like, you should have no guilt whatsoever about engaging in this hobby. It is, to me, a way, again, like I mentioned earlier, of kind of leveling the playing field. So take full advantage of all the points and miles and do it with like a sigh of, I'm sticking it to the system.
Hello, travel hackers. You just heard a clip from Lindsay Brian Podvin from Mind Money Balance. Lindsay is a biracial financial therapist, speaker, and Plutus-nominated author of the book, The Financial Anxiety Solution. In her therapy practice, Mind Money Balance, Lindsay uses shame-free financial therapy to help people get their minds and their money in balance. She lives with her partner and their dog in Michigan. In today's episode, we talk about how some of the financial anxiety problems that Lindsay sees in her financial therapy practice can cross into the points and miles space. In case you have ever had the feeling that you weren't, quote, good enough at this hobby, or you feel ashamed about your redemption value, or you just feel anxious about credit cards in general, this episode is definitely for you. And if you would like to talk to a travel hacking coach about how to get your points and miles strategy in line, I offer free 30-minute coaching calls. We will help you get started in the right direction to get the travel that you want for next to no cost. You can sign up for a time to chat at calendly.com/geobreeze or check out the links in the show notes. And now, on with the show. Hey, Lindsay, welcome to the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast.
Hey, Julia, I'm happy to finally chat with you.
I'm so excited to have you here as well. And we are going to talk today about not just your travel hacking experiences, but also financial therapy and what that means from your day job, and then also how we might be able to incorporate some of those mindset exercises in the world of travel hacking. So I am very excited to have you here today.
Yes, likewise.
So before we jump into all of your different travel hacking tips, your financial therapy tricks, tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your background and how did you get into the hobby of travel hacking as well into a profession around personal finance?
Yeah, so I got into financial therapy because my background is in clinical social work. So I'm a traditionally trained therapist and I'd specialized in depression and anxiety. And then just in my own life had experienced a unique relationship with money. I come from a very privileged financial background and went into the field of social work. And so in one sense, I had a ton of financial privilege that afforded me the ability to finish school without any student loans, which is really pretty much unheard of. And I did have pretty good access to the basics of financial literacy. But at the same time, I didn't quite know just how little I would be paid as a social worker. Like I had an idea, but it wasn't until I got my first job with a master's degree making $32,000 a year and started finding myself like living paycheck to paycheck and the stress that came along with it that I really realized I need to get my numbers really under control. And I felt so much guilt and so much shame because I came from this financially privileged background and I was still struggling financially. And I felt like, you know, I had this leg up and I totally wasted it. And here I am complaining about making this money and I should be able to figure out how to make it work. But at the end of the day, that amount of money in a higher cost of living area in the Midwest really was a challenge. And when I ran the numbers, I realized I was earning less as a social worker than I was as a waitress. And that was when it really kind of had this aha moment of, yes, you need to save money and you need to be cognizant of how much you're spending, but a better choice or a quicker choice is to earn more money. So I started learning about the role of personal finance, reading books, literally checking them out from the library and getting more comfortable and confident managing my numbers. But it really was when I started making more money that I could breathe. And then in terms of how that overlaps with my relationship with clients as a financial therapist, I had so many clients with depression and anxiety and chronic stress coming in with money stressors. And as social workers, we weren't trained to talk about money. And I felt like it was a huge disservice to hold space for clients to cover their mental health and their mental well-being, but not talk about money. So that's when I wanted to start bringing in some of the personal finance into the therapy room, but I wanted to do it in an ethical way. I definitely wanted to stay in my lane. I'm not a certified financial planner. I'm not an actuary. I'm not a CPA, right? My lane is very much as a therapist. So I sought out additional training in financial social work and in financial therapy to help people with the emotional side of money. So less, what is a budget, and more, why am I procrastinating on making a budget? What's making it difficult for me to stick to it? What are the emotions and the thoughts that are coming up when I reconcile my numbers or when I create different savings buckets? So yeah, that's a little bit about me and financial therapy and how I ended up there.
That is all so fascinating. What would you say are some of the most common emotional stressors and underlying issues that you find when people talk to you about their money depression or their money anxiety? And then also, do those types of money stressors affect people, do you think, when talking about points and miles and not just a regular paycheck?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is comparisonitis. And not in terms of, oh, my neighbor bought a BMW, now I want to buy a BMW, but more of, money is so secretive in our culture. So we assume that other people know how to manage their finances. And we somehow are the only people who weren't taught it. And we can only compare our finances to our neighbors and folks in our community by guessing. So we can guess, okay, they've got a Beamer, they've got a nice house, they took a nice vacation. We are guessing that they, you know how to manage their money very appropriately and make a good living. But what we don't know is if they are A, travel hackers and are figuring out ways to get to those places for free or incredibly reduced costs. We don't know if they are living in incredible amounts of debt. We don't know how much financial privilege they have had, or if they had a leg up in terms of, you know, a family member helping out with a down payment on a house or paying for their college education. So we are comparing ourselves to others, but we don't really know what we are comparing them to. So when it shows up in the therapy space, it often sounds like, oh my gosh, I'm so far behind, or oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel so dumb, et cetera, et cetera. And it's that shame that then kind of bleeds into financial anxiety, which is worrying about your money in terms of worrying about, am I doing enough? Am I doing it the right way? Or procrastinating on money? Like, we're so anxious we're going to get it wrong, so we just don't start at all. So it kind of bleeds into that. And I would say, yes, of course, that bleeds into the travel hacking community. I know for me, I had to be really cognizant about the content I was taking in because I didn't want to travel the certain way that certain people were talking about. And I had a lot of guilt and shame of like, oh, I totally messed up that redemption. I'm not doing this the right way. And it's like, no, no, no. Just like personal finance is personal, so is, or so should be, travel hacking, right? You don't need to go to the Hyatt Paris Vendome if that isn't the way you like to travel. And on the flip side, you don't have to worry about getting a Southwest Companion Pass if you'd rather fly in business. So I think it comes back to comparing yourself with others, but you don't really have a good sense of what you are comparing to.
I love all of that. I love everything that you said about the comparing game, because It happens so much, both in regular money and in travel hacking, where you see somebody else say they earned millions of points and miles this year. So maybe you're doing something wrong, or somebody else was able to get $17 per point or something ridiculous because they knew every trick in the book. So maybe you're doing something wrong. And we just run into that over and over again. And one of my key missions with this podcast is to show there's so many different ways to live a travel hacking lifestyle. And I know that you're doing the same with your podcast, which is about different ways that people can approach therapy. Is that correct?
Yeah, my podcast is called Mind Money Balance, and it's still kind of getting its footing. So I've decided on seasons. One of the benefits of being a social worker is there's a lot of diversity in the way that you can practice. And so I feel like my podcast kind of follows that. The first season really focused on couples and money. And the second season, which we're getting close to wrapping up right now, is all about therapists and money, because therapists in particular have soaked up the message that it's not possible to be a good therapist and care about money, or you can't charge, or you'll be turning away clients, or the only way to be accessible is to slide your scale. So we've soaked up a lot of those messages that are really incredibly harmful.
Yeah, I know that's a huge debate in the therapy world of, if you're charging people money, then you're basically unethical for trying to make a living while helping other people, which is a really dangerous game to get into.
Absolutely, it is. And it's, we have to take care of our well-being as therapists. And to me, financial self-care and financial wellness is a huge cornerstone of taking care of your mental and physical and emotional well-being, but we just don't talk about it. So I'm happy to have platforms like this that are these interesting overlaps of the ways in which money and travel and leveraging credit cards can show up, and showing folks that there's more than one way to do things, whether it's being a therapist or more than one way to travel hack.
Absolutely. And I know that your channel is also very vocal about uplifting BIPOC communities, underrepresented communities, immigrant communities. And I'm trying to do that as well with travel hacking. But can you talk a little bit about some of the unique challenges that would face these different communities, both in the sense of points, miles, and also regular finances?
Of course. So in the traditional personal finance space, there is a lot of language around having very firm boundaries with family members. And when you think of the BIPOC community and immigrant communities, refugee communities, of course, first of all, we're not a monolith, but it's irresponsible to say, just kick your Lola out of your house, just cut off your adult children, because that's not the way the culture is set up. Multi-generational families and households are much more the norm, but in the, as our friend Berna Anat likes to say, hella male, hella pale personal finance space, they say that, like, you have to have these firm financial boundaries, and you have to, you know, who cares if your parents overspent? You got to let them live on the street. They got to deal with their consequences. And it's like, first of all, that's highly irresponsible anyway, just as a human being. But when you're telling people who are BIPOC, who are immigrants, who are refugees, to kick out members of their family and to not support their family, you're really re-traumatizing them. And it's just so culturally inappropriate to paint with a very broad brush in the personal finance space. So that's one big thing. And then the other big thing is just acknowledging the systemic ways in which people of color, immigrants, and refugees have been boxed out of the personal finance space in the United States. You know, I'm not as well-versed with the rules and regulations and laws of other countries, but in the US, there were very real things that kept people of color from having access to good neighborhoods, good schools, credit cards, bank accounts, colleges, right? So we have had years and years of systemic oppression that have been kind of holding us back from having the same type of access and equity to money. So I think it's so important that we lift each other up. We talk about money, we talk about mental health, and we can look at personal finance with a more critical and nuanced lens to say, that doesn't work for me, that doesn't work for my family, and getting really comfortable with the personal side of personal finance.
For sure. I know a lot of people just turn to the same experts over and over again, whether it's Dave Ramsey in the personal finance world or the same 12 guys in travel hacking with Boarding Area to say, this is how it should go. And this is the single story that I'm going to listen to about how to approach personal finance or points and miles. And I think that having that representation is really important in order to discuss these types of nuances.
Absolutely, it is. We need to have diversity and representation in all spaces. It's not about just having a brown or black person at a conference or on a panel, right? It's about making sure that there are so many voices that can be heard and represented so that people can say, okay, maybe I didn't resonate with this person, but this person over here is kind of talking my language. So I'm going to go listen to what they have to say.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about your lane a little bit. How did you get into travel hacking originally?
Yeah, I got into travel hacking because of really that first social work job. I wanted to travel. I had done a lot of traveling, a lot of solo traveling. And so I was happy to do backpacking and, you know, stay in hostels and stuff like that. But as I got older, I was like, I don't really want to stay in a hostel with 8 strangers. And I was partnered at that time. So it's a little bit more complicated to do couples backpacking and stuff. So I really wanted to travel and I wanted to do it in a way that was kind of this next level. I was ready to kind of graduate from hostel style traveling, but I didn't quite have the funds to do it. So I first took to travel hacking as a way to kind of elevate the travel that I was doing. So for example, I would set a budget of how much a trip would be. And then I would still spend that much, but I would try to offset it as much as possible with travel hacking. So that was the way that I got into it. So it was like 2013, 2014. I started kind of reading some of those different travel blogs and learning how people had leveraged credit card miles for free trips and planned my first hack to a 4 or 5 day trip to New York City with my then partner at the Andaz on Fifth Avenue. And that trip actually allowed my partner to go, oh, Lindsay's not crazy. Like, she's definitely onto something. Because I think it was Ricky Zhang on your show who was saying, like, look, the term travel hack sounds a little sketchy. So I think my partner definitely fell into that of thinking, like, oh my gosh, Lindsay's getting into some weird stuff. So it was very much a seeing is believing. And then from there, I kind of turned them into a believer of travel hacking.
That sounds good. I know a lot of people run into that struggle when they're first trying to get their player two into the game and trying to convince our friends and family that we are not falling for some kind of scam and that we have not completely lost all sense of fiscal responsibility when we open these credit cards.
Yes, exactly. And it makes sense, right? It sounds bananas when you hear about it, but learning a little bit more about it was helpful. And as I'm just thinking out loud, I realized I did like some sort of hacking adjacent stuff before I did travel hacking. So again, that first job where I was being, you know, paid what many social workers are paid, I still wanted to go out to nice dinners and, you know, go to the movies and stuff like that. So what I did was sign up secret shopping. So my partner would attend with me to like secret shops. We'd go to like nice restaurants or we'd go to, you know, different things like that. So I did kind of rope them into coming on secret shops with me.
That sounds good. And so when you were first starting out with getting into travel hacking or travel hacking adjacent stuff, what were some of the first cards that you opened? And also, how were you earning these points since you had a pretty low salary back in the day?
Yeah, because of that low salary, I was really anxious about doing any sort of manufactured spend. My personal mental health history is that I have a history of anxiety and depression and 10 years of recovery in an eating disorder. So I'm really cognizant of knowing what things are going to trigger my anxiety. And I'm really mindful about avoiding the things that are going to kind of tip me over the edge. So manufacturer spend to me just causes a lot of anxiety. So I started out with a Chase Hyatt card to get that Andaz trip. And there must have been an American Airlines card that kind of went along with that to get started. So it was really slow and steady at first. And then, you know, like most things, kind of exploded into getting all, I think at one time I had 22 cards. And then when Chase's 524 hit, then it was no longer that, you know, that typical 91 days, right? I had a set on my phone every 91 days, I would apply for like 3 cards and whatever. but also I was looking at really low spend or low minimum spend cards, right? I was looking for things that had like $500 or $1,000 minimum spend. And over the course of 3 months, when you just consider things like groceries and gas, it really didn't take long to hit that. And I was always aware of making sure that I wasn't overspending just to hit a minimum spend. So if that meant that I just got one card instead of three cards in that 91-day period, that was totally fine.
I like it. I like how you make sure that you have a set spending plan and that you're very in tune with your different spending habits so that you don't accidentally buy $1,000 worth of random crap on Amazon just to meet the minimum spend. It's probably one of the most important rules when it comes to travel hacking.
Yeah, definitely having a plan is incredibly important. Don't just go, oh, there's 100,000 points here and there's 50,000 points there. I'm just going to grab them, because you may end up taking that ding on your credit and not meeting the minimum spend and then having wasted a hard pull for basically nothing.
For sure. So as you were getting into the world of travel hacking, what are some of the mistakes that you made early on where you want to say, hey, kids, don't make the same mistake that I did?
There were so many mistakes. Before I was officially indoctrinated to the world of travel hacking, one of my first jobs was actually in marketing, where I quite literally lived out of a hotel for 8 months. So you can imagine the status and points that I accrued. But I also had no idea about the world of travel hacking. So I turned all of those almost all of those hotel points into airline miles, which anybody out there is probably just cringing, because I lost out on a ton of great options for status-based redemptions. And I probably could have done a little bit more European travel or Asian travel without having to stay in hostels. So that was for sure when I just did not know what I was doing at all and just saw those points and said, well, I would rather fly somewhere than stay at a hotel. So be very cautious before you redeem those miles. And thankfully, I never redeemed them for magazines or, shopping or anything like that, but it was still pretty bad.
I made the cringy face.
I know.
My face was so cringy. Oh, yeah. That is a really important thing for anybody who's just getting into the game, anybody who's already in the game. Make sure you do the math on what kind of redemption you're going to get. And if that's the redemption value that you want to go for with your different points currencies. So fast forward to today, what is your travel hacking lifestyle like? And I know we're still kind of in the midst of a pandemic, but are you still opening a lot of cards to earn these points? Are you banking up these points to save for a trip that you're planning in the future? What does your travel hacking life look like these days?
Right now, it's almost completely on pause. So, Julia, before you invited me on to chat about my travel hacking, I realized I hadn't even looked at my cards since February of 2020. So this is how long it's been since I've been actively hacking, is that I still have everything in on a spreadsheet. I haven't even updated to the new app to track things. And I think it's also important to just know what had happened for me was one of my kind of routines was to read some travel hacking blogs before bed, right? Get onto boarding area and read some of those more frequently posted about things. And then at the start of the pandemic, it just became such a drain. All you were reading about was middle seats removed and another country blocks travel. So I just stopped really actively doing it. That said, the Chase Reserve is kind of my partner and I's everyday workhorse. So we use it all the time. And then I have a business card of the Amex Blue Business. And so I'm using that all the time as well. So it's not like I've just switched to a debit card, but I haven't been actively hacking in the way that I used to. And it's also just giving myself permission to say, hey, that didn't bring me joy for a little while. It's okay that that memory made me sad and there's no need to force it and push it. Hacking will be there and I can get back into it. It's very much like riding a bike. So following you, Julia, has been really great because I was able to dabble again in the world of hacking a bit. I think you'd posted, I think it was in February, about the using your Hyatt card to to get some miles. And so I was like, all right, I can do that. I can switch it up and use my Hyatt card this month. Sorry, to get some Hyatt points. And so I'm dipping my toe back in.
I love that, because in the world of points and miles and personal finance, we see the message so often about, or the messages about, hustle culture and what the internet has dubbed it as hustle porn, where you hear all of this stuff every day, where if you're not getting up at 5 a.m. and then trying super hard and giving up your entire life, then you deserve to not get ahead in life. But there's such a continuum of, if you want to do that, that's fine. If you don't want to get into this game at all, that's fine. Probably nobody listening to this podcast is on that end of the spectrum. But also, if you're somewhere in the middle where you're saying, I just want to open one or two cards a year, get one or two free trips a year, economy's fine. I just want to save $1,000 here or there. That's fine. And I'm so glad we have somebody on the podcast who's saying, that's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it is. So I want to normalize for anyone who has maybe fallen off the travel hacking wagon that it's okay. And I always go back to, whether I'm working with my clients or whether I'm thinking about, you know, something like this, is what's your why behind it? What is the reason that you got into travel hacking in the first place? And for me, it was that I knew I didn't want to do hostel travel anymore, but I didn't want to give up travel. How could I bridge the gap to make it work for me? And so if a person listening is saying, like, you know, we've got a huge family, the best thing for us to do is get the Southwest cards and make sure we've got a companion pass so we can visit family across the country. Great. Keep that, your eye on the prize, so to speak. You know, not everybody wants to have like the lounge life and be only doing business class where they can shower. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? Like, I've got it in my head, like, ooh, that would be fun someday. But also, just go back to, what's the reason for it? Are you travel hacking so you can see family more often? Are you travel hacking because you want to take one of those once in a lifetime trips? Are you travel hacking because maybe your job doesn't pay well and it's a great way for you to be able to continue your travel lifestyle? Think about your why and return to that. And if you miss out on like a month of hacking, or like me, a year of hacking, it's going to be okay.
What would you say to somebody where, if they're digging deep and they're like, my why for travel hacking is so I can impress people on Instagram?
I would encourage them to think about what they think will happen if that comes true, meaning, how will your life be improved or changed if somebody else follows you on Instagram or likes you on Instagram? And if you don't have a meaningful answer for that, it's probably not a good choice. Meaning, like, Julia, for you, I love that you're like, look, this is my hobby. It's so fun for me. And I'm monetizing it for the fun of it, not because I need this to be my lifestyle. And you're super transparent about what you're doing with those funds. And your mission behind it is to connect other people who aren't traditionally seen in this space. So for you, if you were like, hey, I want to get more likes and followers, it's not just for vanity metrics sake. For you, it's to further your mission of including BIPOC and women in the field of travel hacking and expose them to this knowledge. So I would say to them, what's your why behind getting those likes and followers? And if it's just for vanity metrics, it's going to feel incredibly hollow.
I absolutely agree with that. I think there's a lot of people who kind of dream of the life of Instagram, where they say, I want to travel hack so that I can get a huge following, and then eventually I can just sell courses about how to travel hack or how to grow an Instagram. A lot of people hope to just grow their Instagram so that they can get other people to pay them to learn how to grow an Instagram, which is viable. But I also think it has created some perverse incentives, both in the world of personal finance and in the world of points and miles. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I do have a lot of thoughts on that. And it's really, I also want to normalize to people that you can just have a hobby to have a hobby. Not everything has to be monetized and leveraged to the nth degree. I think in North American society, especially, this idea that we have to monetize the things that we love is also incredibly harmful. You don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. and hustle and do your, you know, 7-minute HIIT routine and then slam a smoothie in order to have a healthy life. There are more than one ways to do things. And like, for me, I think it's important to remember that you're allowed to enjoy things just for the sake of enjoying them. You don't have to do things to amass a following on Instagram, to monetize a blog. You don't even have to start a blog. So just reminding people that they're allowed to have hobbies just for the sake of having hobbies.
For sure. There are so many people out there who enjoy travel hacking for the sake of getting free travel. They don't even talk about it on Instagram. And that's great. That's completely a legit lifestyle of travel hacking. There are other people who, like we mentioned, do this recreationally. There are some people who like to go all in on it. And all of these are legit lifestyles as long as it is what's making you happy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So speaking about things related to travel hacking that makes you happy, what would you say is the piece of this entire hobby where you're just like, oh, it brings me so much joy?
Honestly, it's like every single time I've travel hacked, it's been a sense of joy because I feel like it's like you're in on a secret. You know what I mean? When you get on the plane and you're kind of looking around and you're like, you know, there's a little bit of smugness, which I think is okay, right? As long as you're not being an ass about it. But like, oh man, I know this redemption is worth $1,000 and I got it for $5.40. Like there is something super exciting about it. But really, it's like anytime I've travel hacked, I've been so grateful. I've had so much gratitude for the ability to leverage this for the benefit of being exposed to other cultures, creating memories with my partner, flying to people's weddings or honeymoons, not other people's honeymoons, my honeymoon. but for me, it really is a joy. It really does bring me a lot of excitement anytime I travel hack.
Absolutely. I love how much happiness this brings to our different communities on Instagram, to everybody who hears about this hobby. So I like that we're doing our little part to spread the hobby to as many people as possible, especially the communities who maybe haven't heard of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more we can normalize it, then I think it opens up the possibility for folks to be exposed to things that they normally wouldn't, maybe to go to locations they hadn't previously thought of because they thought they were too expensive or too out of reach or there was nowhere to stay affordably. It's like this helps to level the playing field in a way that most travel hasn't, right? Most travel is pretty inaccessible to most people. Dr. Kiona, who has How to Not Travel podcast, she talks about this idea of travel privilege. So travel hacking to me is a way to help expose folks who otherwise wouldn't have been able to travel or to have been able to travel in the way they want to those types of opportunities.
For sure. And speaking of different opportunities, are there any trips that you are looking forward to right now or that you are planning for when the world fully opens back up?
Yeah, I have a few. And it's really interesting just the way that my mind has shifted over the past year. So I booked my first plane ticket in who knows how long to go to Salt Lake City, actually. One of my sisters lives out there. Thankfully, my siblings and I are all now vaccinated, but we're sprinkled across the country. And one of our siblings lives in Salt Lake. So we're going to do a nice long weekend there, which will be really fun. And then we'll plan on visiting some friends in New York City. And I've got, you know, just a stack of Hyatt points that I can use. So I might be returning to an Andaz in my near future. But it's really interesting just to go to kind of practice what I preach a little bit about travel hacking, right? Like it doesn't have to be first class ANA to, you know, Argentina. It can be like a regular old ticket just to go see family, or it can be about upgrading a hotel visit in New York to go safely visit friends. So for me, it's almost like really kind of getting back into travel hacking, truly in alignment with my mindset around both money and travel hacking.
I'm excited for you to come to New York. Let me know when you're in town and we'll definitely grab coffee or something. I would also recommend checking out the Park Hyatt in New York City. I've heard great things and I am planning a staycation in there with my giant stack of Hyatt points as well.
Yes, the Park Hyatt. I totally forgot that it was open. It's been so long since I've been to the city that it was like in the, it was supposed to open when I was there and that it was delayed. So I will have to add that to my list. And for sure, we will connect because I know you're just across the bridge.
Absolutely. And as we are wrapping up here, what is the number one piece of advice that you have regarding travel hacking? And I know you've dropped so many different gems throughout this episode, but if you had to sum it all up in one line, what would your piece of advice be?
It's going to sound so anarchist, but I promise you that I'm not. But like, don't feel guilty about taking these points that the banks and credit cards are giving you. It's kind of my way of sticking it to the man after years of the ways in which these banks boxed people out of having access to them. So to me, I'm like, scam scammers, yo. And again, I know that sounds terrible, but I'm like, you should have no guilt whatsoever about engaging in this hobby. It is to me a way, again, like I mentioned earlier, of kind of leveling the playing field. So take full advantage of all the points and miles and do it with like a sigh of, I'm sticking it to the system.
I am silently clapping so much. I absolutely love that. Wherever anybody's like, don't you feel like you're being a little bit unethical of making travel more accessible to people who previously have been a little bit underserved and underprivileged by telling them about this travel hacking hobby and spreading it to all these underrepresented communities? Nope.
Yeah, exactly. I think you are doing, you know, the Lord's work to be a little over the top about it.
Oh, thank you so much. And one of the things that I like to do with the end of this podcast is do some kind of travel or money shout out to somebody else in, whether it's the travel points world or something else. Who would you like to give your shout out to today?
So for me, I'm told, Julia did not pay me to say this, but really being connected with you, Julia, has been such a gift because it's reminded me of the joys of travel hacking. And I've been exposed to so many more voices than in the travel hacking space that I previously hadn't been exposed to by just following places like Boarding Area. And for me, it is, you know, getting a broad array of not just travel hackers, but I really do appreciate Dr. Kiona, how she talks about how to travel ethically and to do it in a way that is beneficial to the community and getting off the beaten path a little bit. Again, you don't have to stay in a hostel or couch surf, but she's got an amazing list of people who are tour guides who are going to show you places outside of, you know, the things that you would book through a Chase Ultimate Rewards portal. So I would say if you're ready to kind of get your plan in place for once you're on the ground in these locations, check her out as a way to kind of round out your cultural awareness feed.
She is one of my favorite travel Instagrams. Her handle is fantastic. It's How Not to Travel Like a Basic Bitch, which I love that. I just love the name. I love all of her content.
I love, love, love all of her work. And it's been so great to see her finally recognized for her advocacy efforts that she's been doing long before the last couple of months. So I'm really happy to see her page kind of explode.
For sure. And where can we find you on the
internet? My company is called Mind Money Balance, M-I-N-D. I am at Instagram. My website is of the same name, and so is my podcast. So mindmoneybalance.com or over on Instagram at that handle.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, for coming on today. We've learned so much about financial therapy, your travel hacking journey, different mindset blocks that people could run into and how to get over them, both in relation to points and miles and personal finance. So thank you so much for sharing all of these different gems.
Yeah, and I want to thank you too, because we had originally scheduled this podcast for a few weeks ago, and I had reached out to you and just said, look, I am so emotionally tapped out with all the events happening in our community that I need to hit pause for a little bit. And I appreciate that, you know, you and I come from a very similar background in some ways and a very different background in other ways, but I appreciate that you were able to go, yeah, no problem. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
For sure. And I think that's one of the important things too, as we build out our brand with personal finance, with Instagram, with anything, is just to show a little bit of grace to the community. And then also, it's so important to follow people from cultures who are different than yours, because I think a lot of people just didn't understand what was going on with the hate crimes in the Asian American community and everything, and without following people who are of that community, there's just no way that a lot of people would know, because the larger media wasn't covering it for a long, long time. And I think a lot of people in the Points and Miles world only found out about it through my page. I think a lot of people in the therapy world possibly only found out about it through your page. So that's why it's so important to feature people from all different backgrounds, no matter what your niche is.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the GeoBreeze Travel Podcast. If any of the cards mentioned in today's episode piqued your interest, please use the links in the show notes to apply to support the show. Additionally, it would mean the world to me if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. And if you would like to make even more travel hacking friends, please sign up for the Patreon to access our monthly masterclass hangouts. We dive deep into a particular program each month, and you'll get to ask all of your travel hacking questions and enjoy being around other people who enjoy points and miles just as much as you and I do. If you would like an invite to the next one, head over to geobreezetravel.com/hangouts to sign up to be on the invite list. Take care and happy travels.